Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to Sam in the Morning with Tori, only on LA Talk Radio.
Good morning. Welcome to the show. Today is Monday, March 27th. Good morning, Tori.
Good morning, Sam.
Thanks for riding shotgun once again. Did you bring your rifle with you? For riding shotgun. Do you know where that came from?
Yeah, didn't they ride to they rode to the church because they got the girl pregnant, right?
I don't think that's the case. The shotgun thing? No, I think they were like on the horse wagon.
Oh, and that makes so much sense.
And the guy that rides next to the guy.
Isn't there something called like a shotgun wedding though?
That's different. Shotgun wedding is real fast, right?
I think it's because the woman's pregnant and the dad carries a shotgun to the wedding.
Oh,
to
wow.
Make sure.
Well, maybe that makes sense.
I think I might.
That totally
makes sense. I'm 98% sure I made that up.
But they say you're riding shotgun, so it's
right, okay.
So, yeah.
Sorry.
So
I was not on board. I'm so
I
sorry.
Hope I'm right. If I'm screwing this up,
no, you're
man,
totally right.
Know.
No, you're
you
right.
Think?
Totally, yeah. That guy would have the shot. I wasn't on board with the metaphor. Sorry.
No worries. But thanks for joining the ride once again.
Anytime.
We have a special guest in the studio, and we'll get to him in just a few moments. You know the story. There's a mess in here because they're repainting our walls and everything. But it's going to... Doesn't it already feel nice and clean
in here?
It
feels so... And Sam, if you guys don't know, Sam is a very clean person. And I am a very messy person, so it works well. But he can feel better. Like energetically when it's clean around you.
Right.
It looks like the scene from The Matrix when Neo walks in and like shoots the whole lobby. Mm-hmm. That's what it looks like. It's crazy.
Right.
And then in here it's much peace. Very nice.
Very
good
peaceful.
Job.
Yeah, yeah. And I think I'm going to add some accents here. I don't know. But for now it's just peaceful. I like when the walls are white. You know, after 4 years here and probably thousands of people going through here. I mean, I'm not saying hundreds. You know, in a year there's got to be probably, you know,
so this was the first paint job, huh?
So, yeah, in four years,
you
know? Yeah,
you
don't want to do this all the time. It's a pain in the ass.
It is, but I got to tell you, you like the white walls. It's very Steve Jobs in Google of you.
Really?
It is. He couldn't decide on furniture so much that he didn't have any in his house except a Tiffany lamp, and he sat on the floor.
Wow. Now, you see, this is by design. Like, people say, how come you don't have posters and stuff like that inside the studio? We have them outside.
Right.
We have them outside the studio. But, no, I feel it would be distracting. If you're sitting here and you start to read what's in the picture.
Totally.
Or watch it, you know? So, I've got absolutely nothing in the studio except what we absolutely need.
Well, I stare at this plant a lot.
Right?
Yeah.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah. Or you can look outside.
I look
and
at the U.S. Bank
outside.
Building. That's right.
So you have to be undistracted when you're on the radio or the hell with you.
And just a heads up, you guys, we do have a poster outside, but it's of Steve Jobs.
Yes.
This is crazy.
Right?
Yeah, very good.
Yeah, I like him. Obviously, you know, a lot of people look up to him.
Obviously.
And as we all know, he wasn't the greatest manager to work for.
No, he's a real true asshole. No, total asshole.
Right.
But he changed the world.
But he got what
visionary.
He wanted, you know.
And he was a one of a kind, honest to God, you know, hero in American history.
Imagine America without Steve Jobs.
I'm holding an iPhone as we talk, and I'm like, that's Steve Jobs. That guy's
that's
good.
Steve Jobs.
He did everything.
Go.
Yeah. So he's a visionary.
Next year we celebrate 10 years, or is it this year? I think this year. No, it came out in 2008 or 2007. So probably this year is going to be 10 years.
Oh, wow.
I think there's going to be like a special edition phone or something.
Maybe on everyone's phone, his hologram like appears, like the Obi-Wan Kenobi thing, and it is just like, "Hey, everyone."
Yeah. Wow, you're talking about holograms. I decided to take the dip and get into actually professional VR, virtual reality.
Wow.
Because up until now, I just used Google Cardboard.
Sure,
which is
that's what I was doing.
Right, and with your phone. But now I invested in a PS4 VR, which works with your PlayStation. This thing is like, I haven't gotten it yet. I'm looking forward to it, but I already did all the research, right?
Of course.
This is incredibly, like, supposedly, like, unbelievable, you know? I mean, imagine, like, high-definition video where it looks real. And then imagine a dinosaur right in front of your face. The face of
I'm
the dinosaur.
I'm never going to see you again.
There you go.
Hey, Sam, are you coming to the show? I'm in Jurassic Park.
Yeah, exactly.
Leave me alone.
And so we'll see. I mean, there's a lot of possibilities for this. I'm even thinking of setting it up here so people can actually check
it out. You
can
do it in the lobby or something. And right. It's got a weird.
Except think about it. You're getting goggles and earphones. How are you going to give it to other people?
Yeah, yeah. You're very clean. You're clean right? again. I wasn't thinking. Yeah.
No. I mean, I was thinking about it, but... I think it'd be a great idea.
Yeah.
But it's an expensive toy, and I'm not going to put it on many people's ears. It's just not going to happen.
No.
So what I'll do is I'm just preparing you because I'll probably have stories about it.
Oh, so excited.
You know, they even have... what I'm eager to see is the VR porn.
Okay, so my question is this. Yes. Let's hit pause on that for a second. What, okay. I thought we were going to do, like, is it like... Alexander the Great. So they do have porn and stuff.
They do. Like, what they do is they just shoot it in like 360. Okay.
So you're just, are you like the gaffer at the
porn
shoot?
You're like, you're like the, no, you are the main actor.
Oh.
And the girls are around you.
Oh, you're like the dude?
You're the dude.
This is crazy.
And the girls are around you. So they walk in everywhere you look. If you turn around, there's the other girl
there.
We're
turning into robots. This is Westworld, and I'm getting scared.
I'm telling you. Now, imagine this. Imagine augmented reality, which is they're using VR, but...
there's touch and sound.
But there's touch and sound. So, for example, if you're like banging on a virtual table, there'll actually be a table there, but you'll see a different looking table and stuff,
so
right?
So this is like the holiday. Deck from Star Trek, which I always wanted.
Right,
this is incredible. But then, what happens to quote? If you don't see me doing air quotes, real world.
Yeah,
it becomes
I don't know
so
what's
boring.
Happen.
Yeah, if you're not Mr. Ron Jeremy in the next fantasy, then you're just walking, taking a walk. Doesn't seem that interesting.
I know. I mean, imagine how immersed we are in our phones already, detached from reality. Imagine with the goggles on our.
What's funny is we're immersed in stuff like Snapchat, which is really low quality. Like people just writing, like I'm in San Diego. Like, who cares? So, like, this stuff, like, imagine having it be, like, remember the first time you walked into a Best Buy and you saw, like, an HD TV, and you're like, are those ducks in the store? It's like that. It's going to be, like...
And now you have 4K. Have you seen the 4K TVs?
Yeah, and the curved?
Yes, the curved Samsung is unbelievable.
Best Buy, I don't know. That's a weird feeling when I get in there. Everyone's just zombies in there being, like, the future.
I know.
But that's exciting, too.
I know. It is exciting, but... We don't know what's going to happen.
Right.
Let's just hope nothing happens in the next 40, 50 years, Tori, so we can still enjoy
After
our lives.
After that, we're good.
Yeah.
See ya. Good luck.
Yeah.
So that's at least science is getting better.
Yeah.
Everything else is getting worse, but that's getting better.
Mm. Well, we'll see. Yay. But, I mean, obviously there's going to be experiences there. But I can just imagine, you know, I mean, just to top this off and change the topic, but we were talking about the porn, and then I was thinking augmented reality would be like someone giving you a blowjob while the girl's giving you a blowjob in the movie. You know what I'm saying? There'll be like a real girl there.
Isn't like that you'll just go, like prostitution?
Like you'll go to a prostitute, but you don't want to look at her. You want a different girl, right?
Oh, that's terrible.
This guy said, maybe you want to make love to an alien or something, you know? So you just seen the alien there, but you're feeling all the real feeling.
But how did they get the alien there?
That's in the animation. That's
you're saying that's
the glasses.
Not augmented.
Yeah.
But some you do realize, other than porn, which I know a lot of guys are thinking about right now, there will be augmented, there'll be marriages, there will be relationships that are purely literally people are in love with their blow-up dolls.
Yeah.
Imagine if it's like a real honest to God relationship.
Right.
I mean, this could change. Then you go to the courts and you say, well, is this a real marriage?
Right.
I mean, there's a lot of sort of philosophical discussions about this. That's other than the porn. The porn's also fun.
Yeah, well, you know, I mean, I just had to bring it up.
No,
it's not the main thing, obviously. But, so I'm looking forward to that, and you guys will probably hear a lot of stories as I start exploring a new world.
So you don't have to go camping. You can just go quote-unquote camping.
Yeah, well, forget about that. I need camping badly.
Okay, good.
Yeah,
okay.
I went out of town a little bit just driving up the coast, and it was so beautiful just to get away, you know?
Would you rather do that than the VR camping?
I'd rather do... real stuff any day.
What if I blew like pine scent in your face while you were on VR?
I still
prefer the real.
I
think that's good.
I guess it's a really hot chick in the video.
See, that's where
the
you
VR.
Keep up. Right. Okay. So that's I think you're gonna have an augmented relationship. A VRX, that's what they're calling it.
Oh wow. Man. But supposedly, as you can imagine, it's also a great platform for scary movies and stuff.
Sure.
So you go to a haunted house
or
something.
Forget
it. Imagine?
Forget
you
someone behind
there.
You and you turn and it's
right.
there. How about also, though, I'm such a nerd. I'm like, schooling would be good.
Yeah,
like,
right?
Education, you could be part of a protest. You could be part of this March on Selma. You could be part of all that. You could be Rosa Parks.
No, absolutely, man. Absolutely.
That's very cool.
And it's very cool. You know, I mean, you can do a lot of things with it. We're going to get to a guest in just a second. I just wanted to bring up, I mean, I don't even see it on CNN.com, but I did hear, or was it fake news, that Huma Abedin is back with Wiener?
Yeah,
is that
I've
true?
Not heard that, no.
No?
I have not.
So that's
heard
fake news.
I'm sure.
I can't believe this.
Yeah. Where are you seeing it? Where'd you get that?
I saw it on Facebook.
Oh, yeah. Okay. So when you get your source from Facebook,
right,
that's not a source.
But
like,
wait a minute. So wait a minute. So, you know,
I mean, I have not heard that, and I've been all over.
And I was listening to Howard Stern this morning, but I just realized it's probably a replay.
Yeah.
A replay from when she went back to him that other time.
Facebook makes you need to take a close look on that, because you can get, like, I'm always like, Betty White died? This is the 10th time I've thought this. No, it's on Facebook. Like, really? So, and then they would say she dyed her hair. No, I have not heard a word or peep of that. And
okay, so this is a replay.
I haven't heard anything about it. But
that's amazing, because on the metadata of the show, you know, the text you get in the radio, it doesn't say replay or whatever.
Oh.
And it irritates me, because when they do run replays,
but you don't know what's real.
They tell you what year it is usually.
I see.
But now I'm couldn't have come back to him again.
I have heard nothing. So we will wait and see. I don't think it'd be a good idea if you're listening.
Yeah, right?
I feel like he might have a problem. There seems to be a pattern of dick issues. Creep. And you know what the problem is that I like really loved Wiener. Like, I loved him as a prosecutor. I thought he was a great up-and-coming Democrat with some real balls, until he started showing them to everyone.
Yeah.
Way to ruin that. Even Bill Maher kept him on his show, and he's like, everyone makes mistakes. He's still back. He'd show another dick.
Yeah,
dude.
And then he went again. I don't understand that.
No. Wiener, you really lived up to your name. I'm so annoyed by that guy.
Yeah. And finally, before we get to our guest, something we really don't need to know is that Kim Kardashian wants another baby.
I don't care.
Right? Do we really need to know that?
No, I really could care less.
Okay, the hell with that then. All right, let's get to our guest right now. And
I mean, good for her. I don't care.
Yeah. We don't really care. She's got two already. I really don't care what Kim Kardashian
I care about her
wants.
As a pop culture expert and, you know, someone who studies the way of pop culture. I do. I think she's a really valid person to really discuss, because she turned a chapter in the American pop culture. Right. I don't care if she wants another.
Exactly. Yeah. There we go. Okay. Well, we're being joined by Mr. Blaine Weaver. Welcome to the show, sir.
Yay. That's my lead-in, Kim Kardashian.
I know.
What's that?
There you go. You see, so you never know what you're going to get on this show.
You never do.
Life is full of chocolates, and this show is full of cookies. You don't know what you're going to get.
For the record, I heard what you heard. Wiener was back together.
Really?
Like, yeah. There's a big... Whoa. Everybody's mad about it. Me too.
Interesting. Well, I haven't heard anything about it. If it's true, it's a terrible idea.
Yeah, right?
It's a really awful idea.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, Blaine, welcome to the show, sir.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Yeah, I love your name. I've always liked the name Blaine, because it's uncommon, and it sounds like a character from a comic book or something, right?
Well, it is the character from Pretty in Pink that Andrew McCarthy plays. So in my age bracket, I get that a lot.
Really?
And I did a movie with John Cryer 10 years ago. And in Pretty in Pink, he has this line, was, Blaine isn't a name, it's a major appliance. And when I met him, the first thing he said to me was, all right, I'm sorry. All right, I'm sorry for any hell you caught for me making fun of your name. Everybody named Blaine crosses the street to yell at me. I apologize. So.
That's awesome. That's awesome. Now, let me ask you this. Do you have any siblings?
I'm an only child.
Oh, really?
Yeah, just me.
So how did your parents ever tell you how they came by the name? I mean, why did they like it so much?
You know, my mom is just... She wanted the name, and like, her middle name is Gail with a Y, so my name is Blaine with a Y. It's, you know, cute,
awesome
mom stuff. I don't know.
But that's the thing, it keeps you unique, though, right? When it's not the common spelling for a name,
right?
Then I mean, you can do like a Blaine.com and nobody would,
for sure,
yeah, you know,
for sure.
So. I like Blaine Weaver, I like them together, but the name Blaine itself, I've never really liked very much.
Oh, how interesting.
Well, I grew up in the South, so hearing it. Uh-huh. Blaine is kind of it's not a good
blind.
Blaine.
Like blame almost. Yeah, blind.
When I introduce myself, I always say my name is Jack when I go to Starbucks, because I don't want to hear your name is Bling. Your name is Blame.
What?
Like as in Bling Bling. I'm like, all right, everybody,
it's
take
Jack.
It easy.
It's Jack.
Jack. Just
exactly.
Call me Jack.
I long time ago started giving a false name.
Oh,
nobody
me too.
Needs to know who I am.
I say Lola half
right?
the time.
Lola's a good one.
Why not? Swear to God.
We all have the names that we wish we'd had, maybe. No?
Oh, my God. There's an interesting story. The new Star Wars has a planet, and the guy came up with it because his name, was Gareth. And the Starbucks guy wrote Scarif. Uh-huh. And he was like, oh, that's a good name for my planet. Scarif. And it's in the new planet, Star Wars. Right. So you never know. Inspiration.
Awesome. Yeah, exactly.
So where in the South did you grow up?
Bossier City, Louisiana. Bossier, wow. Shreveport. You know?
Okay, so is that like a swamp area too? Or?
Not really. It's actually closer to Dallas, Texas than it is to New Orleans.
Okay.
But, you know, I grew up in the suburbs of Shreveport and, you know, left there when I was 18 for New York and then left there when I was 19 for L.A. So,
wow. Yeah. And how did you end up in New York? What did you go to do there?
I was a teen actor kind of guy.
Really?
And I had done a couple of TV movies that I had booked out of Dallas. And so I wanted to be an actor. So I went to an acting school for a second. And then one of the TV movies that I had done as the year before came out in L.A. So I came to L.A.
I see.
That.
And how old were you at the time when you moved to New York?
I moved there when I was 18, but I had done some work from like 15 to 17.
That's what I was wondering. So you started this early on. You realized this is what I want to do.
Well,
right?
I've been doing theater since I was five.
Really?
So like ages 5 to 15, I was in 3 shows a year at a professional theater company down in Shreveport, Louisiana. So I've pretty much always been doing it.
That's awesome. Very nice. So, I mean, were your parents okay with you moving away at 18? I mean, it's still a kid, right?
I was a kid, but, you know, very, very chesty young man. And, you know, they just, like, you know, like I said, I started auditioning when I was 16 years old. And I booked this movie that shot in Australia. So my mom, who had never been farther than Texas, had to go with me to Australia to shoot this movie. And then the next summer, I booked this other job that was a cowboy movie. So, like, I was kind of doing my own thing pretty early. And they knew that that Shreveport wasn't the place where I was going to grow old. So
yeah, there you go.
They were all right with it.
So you went to New York City. Was it pretty difficult for you in the beginning? I mean, you moved to the big city suddenly.
Well, you know, it's one of those things where you think about when you were, you know, 18. I really had no business being anywhere outside of parental supervision.
Right?
No, what were we doing, man? I mean, I was in, you know, the Upper West Side running around like I knew what the hell I was doing. I couldn't even get into a bar legally, you know?
Yeah.
And I moved to L.A. soon after, and I fell in with this crowd of, like, other teen actors, so we're running, you know, again, we can't get into a bar, so we're going to City Walk and, like, wreaking havoc on the, you know, shop owners there. I don't know what the hell we were doing.
That's what you do.
It was fine. I didn't know any better, you know? Yeah. It's like I was auditioning and, you know, doing some work here and there. I thought I was king of the world.
Yeah, huh? Yeah. So, and how long ago did you move to L.A. then?
I was here in L.A. from 19 to about 4 years ago when I moved back to New York. And I just moved back. So
okay,
now,
so back and forth.
Yeah, now I'm a big weird nomad who's just like not really sure where I'm going to be living and, you know, just kind of
so
enjoying it.
So you live in
LA.
Both coasts for now?
Well, let's say I do. That sounds sexier than,
yeah,
you know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I know. But, yeah, you lived in New York too,
right?
I did.
I lived Upper West Side.
Oh, nice.
Yeah,
nice.
Yeah.
I was in Hell's Kitchen just now.
Oh, nice. Yeah. I love Hell's Kitchen.
I love the Upper West Side.
It's now very cool. I know.
Now it is, yeah.
Yeah. It used to be hell. Now it's very nice.
Yeah.
I've never been to that one, though, but I've been to New York several times, but never to Hell's Kitchen. Yeah. I need to check it out.
Yeah, it's always like that. It's like the meatpacking district, which is gross, turns into like the gays move and it's fantastic and we all start buying real estate and it turns into the most wonderful place.
Right.
So that's the Hell's District. The same thing happened. Now it's this cool, awesome, kind of like edgy place to be.
Yeah. You know, and that happens. It happened in Tel Aviv too, and it was funny because my dad and I were watching the Israeli channel and the area where my dad used to work, and my dad used to be like, he had like a sheet metal business. Mm. So that's like dirty work,
yeah,
okay?
Yeah.
So that's industry and stuff, and it was all part of like old Tel Aviv. Nobody even wanted to go there, right? Mm. Today it's the hippest.
Yeah, yeah.
You know?
They always do that.
Area. Yeah. So that's what I'm saying. So it's the same, you
always.
Know? And you're like, nobody ever wanted to go there. Why would suddenly people be interested? But because people want to,
I guess. They want authenticity.
And nostalgia and stuff like that.
And then they turn it into gentrification and it's all the same.
We had a Starbucks on either side of my street. Honestly. Like, this is the area of town that Daredevil protects. And also, I have 2 Starbucks. So. Either one I want, whichever direction I want to
They've totally invaded our lives with that Starbucks.
Yeah.
You know, I'm telling
it's
you.
Everywhere.
It is. So this is cool. So you moved to L.A. So you've been here how many years now?
Oh, 6 years? Well, no, longer than that. Longer than that. Since I was 19. So, like, you know, about 20 years.
20 years. Oh, 20 years. What am I thinking? Yeah. Okay. Because you just said until a few years ago.
Yeah, so. I just moved back. Yeah, I moved here from New York in December.
Oh, so gotcha. I'm just back again.
It's been great, actually, because I have so many friends. I spent so long here. You know, I went to UCLA. Yeah. And I, you know, I know all these actors and stuff.
All you growing up here, yeah.
I pretty much grew up in this town. So it's like being back, it's just been great. Every night I see old friends that I haven't seen in, you know, a long time. So we just had a premiere for my new movie here. And we went to the after party, and I looked around. And I'm like, this is pretty much just like my birthday party. That's what it feels like. Like, it's all my friends. And I'm like,
that's so funny.
Welcome back, Weave.
That's awesome.
Very cool. We're talking to Blaine Weaver. He's joining us. You're an actor. You do more than acting at this point, right?
I do all of it, man. I'm a writer, director, actor, and I have this production company that I make movies through.
Really?
That's awesome.
Wow. So how did that all come about, your own company?
Well, you know, like I said, I was auditioning. I was acting in my early 20s, and I first of all, I'll go back a little bit. That cowboy movie that I did, I played Matt Damon's little brother. Mm-hmm. And Matt Damon was working on Good Will Hunting with Ben Affleck at the time. And I got to read like this early draft of that script. And I just thought, you know, first of all, Matt Damon's really cool. And like, I want to be him. So I was inspired by that, like of this guy like saying, you know, I don't like the parts I'm getting. I'm going to write a movie to act in. And so my roommate and I at the time, Michael Bacall, we wrote this script together. And it somehow got made. The Independent Film Channel picked it up, and we were going to make it. And then, but the IFC wanted a bigger actor for the lead character. So I had to step down to a smaller part, and they got this hack actor named Joseph Gordon-Levitt to
play
the
main
guy.
Who is that guy?
I always say this, but I'm like, if you're going to be replaced on a movie,
do it by JGL.
You really should have JGL do it because he's awesome. And, you know, it's really hard not to like him.
There's like no one alive doesn't like Joseph Gordon-Levitt.
He's honestly exactly that kind of guy. Exactly the kind of guy you think he's going to be. But so we made that movie.
What was that one called?
It was called Manic. Nice. Kids in a mental institution, blah, blah, blah. Goes to Sundance. All of a sudden, I'm a screenwriter. And I didn't get along at all with the director the entire time. We just, you know, butted heads. And I'm like, you know, if this guy can do this, I can do this. So then I decided I wanted to direct the next thing.
What happens with you. You see someone do it, and you're like, I can do it better.
I can do that.
Yeah, that's your pattern, apparently.
It is my pattern. Disappointment has led to all of my
greatest. Just like me.
So I was making money acting, so I threw money into I owned a house, and I sold the house to finance my first movie. With bad financial decision, as it turns out, but it made me a director. So that's the long short story.
And everybody wants to be a director because what? You get to be the boss.
You get
of
to
the
be
movie.
The boss. You get to hire the people that you like. You know, it's like
you get to
it's
be,
your baby. That's
right.
Your baby.
You're the artist in the painting. You know, I liken it to a painting sometimes. Where the director's the painter and everybody else is your paint and your tools or whatever, and you create the picture.
Well, I mean, my favorite thing about the whole, you know, directing is being able to choose other artists to elevate the end product. So whether it's my director of photography or my producer or my actors,
the choices are yours.
It's like you get to put these really talented people in a room and say, okay, go do that thing that you do.
Right,
and,
then it is your vision. And
then I get credit for it.
Yeah, exactly. I was watching Big Little Lies on HBO, and I watched the inside the episode, and the director was saying, I had Nicole Kidman and Reese Witherspoon, and I didn't say a word, and they did what they're really good at.
Yeah.
And he was like, and I took all the credit. And I was like, yeah, that's exactly what
that's how it works.
But they
pick
the right people.
Yeah,
you pick the right people.
Yeah. No, I mean, if you come up with something creative or new or whatever that contributes to the company, and you work for them, you don't get extra credit. You know, I mean, you're the employee there. That's what they pay you to do.
That's
know?
Your job, dude.
Exactly.
Well, the funny thing about independent film is we're not paying anybody really much at all. but it's great. We've got, like, especially with this new movie, Cut to the Chase, we have this great team that really pulled together and helped to build this movie, all the way from, you know, the lead actors, all the way to the people who would come in and volunteer for the day or, you know, help feed us, you know.
Wow. What's the plot of Cut to the Chase?
Yeah, so Cut to the Chase, is that your film then?
This
is your film.
This is the new one. Yeah, this is Cut to the Chase is a film noir thriller, and it's about this guy, Max, who's an ex-con. I play Max, by
Ooh.
The way.
Oh, nice. Yeah.
Max, so he's an ex-con, deadbeat, and always on the wrong side of the law. And his little sister is always watching out for him and saving the day, basically. And in the first few minutes of the film, she disappears. Mm. So he has to follow the clues through, like, the underworld of this Louisiana town trying to find his kid's
sister.
Oh,
we're back in Louisiana.
We're back. It's like I shot the movie in the town that I grew up
in. Whoa. What? Full circle.
I know.
Why not? I mean, you know.
Synchronicity.
Yeah. No, you tell a story.
Totally.
It helps a lot when you're familiar with the setting, right? With the environment.
And Louisiana has, like, this kind of creepy, cool, like, mystery
really
feel to it.
Mysterious.
There's a fantasy or an enchantment to it that has that kind of, like, suspense.
A fantasy or enchantment.
I
like that very much. I'm going to go back and tell all my high school friends. Yeah. There's a fantasy and enchantment here, you guys. Just don't even worry about it.
Use the quote, you know, fantasy and enchantment, LA Talk Radio on the poster, you know. Take a quote from the show.
It's so funny. My best friend grew up, she's half Creole, and there's, like, you know, there's a cool history behind.
That's cool,
Louisiana.
So out to the, I'm sorry, Cut to the Chase. You guys can follow the film by going to cuttothechasefilm.com. There's a trailer there. So this sounds fascinating. Now, how long is the film?
It's exactly 91 minutes,
nice.
Which I think is the perfect length for
a
edge of your seat. You know, to the you buy the whole seat, but you only need the edge. Wow. And it's, you know, it's popcorn movie, and it's myself, it's Aaron Cahill, who's most known for being Power Rangers Time Force Pink Ranger.
Pink Ranger.
Yeah, we've got Lindy Greenwood, who's a star of Fox's Sleepy Hollow, which is a huge show, amazingly talented, and we have a young actor named Lance Henriksen, which you may know from Aliens and Millennium.
Millennium. He was a star.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And you've seen, an Alien and stuff, everything. Yeah. He's, Henriksen, right?
He's Lance. Awesome.
Yeah.
He's awesome. And it's available now on iTunes, VOD, all that stuff.
Wow.
So you can go
That's awesome. And so is this like your first such project where you did the whole thing, like all the main things?
Well, it's my fourth feature. So my first movie was a movie called Outside Sales. It was a romantic comedy, and I was basically the third lead. I was the bad guy. And then that's the one I sold my house to find. And then
I was the bad guy.
Then I did a movie called Weather Girl that I just wrote and direct. I didn't act in. And then I starred in a movie called 6 Month Rule, romantic comedy. And so this is the third, I guess, of the writing, directing, starring.
How did you come from rom-coms to film noir thriller?
You know what? Honestly, it's about the technology. I know that's a crazy thing to say, but like my first film was in 2006. And we had a very low budget, and you know, it's just way cheaper to film a kissing scene than an explosion.
Yeah.
And so, like, because of finances, I was always kind of
forced
into, like, it has to be relationship based, it has to be talking
more, personality based,
exactly,
less special effects.
But I tell you, I like, because of the inexpensive cameras, and now we've got these LED lights, and you know, these really run and gun options that like are brand new. And I've seen a couple of films. I did a movie called Favor with this writer-director, Paul Osborne, that was the first micro-budget movie that I'd really been a part of. And it was, I believe, $40,000 or something like that. But it was a thriller, and I just couldn't believe how much he accomplished on such a low budget.
Mm-hmm.
And then I saw this other micro-budget action movie called Down and Dangerous, which is quite good. And I was like, okay, that's great. I'd love to try that.
Mm.
And so that's...
Again, you did it.
Yeah, it's pretty much exactly it.
That's so funny.
What are you guys doing over there?
Yeah,
I want to try that.
I want to do that. That's so cute.
So that's what we did. I built this movie around, you know, the budget and the shooting in Louisiana and, you know... the stunts.
Yeah, you went with whatever you had.
Exactly.
Sure.
Wow, that's pretty cool.
And it just kept getting better because of the people we would bring in, you know? Like, we brought in this... we had developed this this kind of theme along the movie of, like, the jump cut that we were going to be able to, you know, quickly jump from one thing to another. So if anything looked cheap, we could cut that out.
That's
or
smart.
If the fight scenes didn't seem as dramatic as we wanted, we would just cut between
smart
it.
Smart thinking.
But then we brought on this stunt coordinator who was, like, genius... And had all this great experience and, like, elevated our, you know, fighting scenes. And we were going to use... There's a new thing that they use that's very inexpensive where you do digital effects for gunshots.
Wow.
So you don't
like
actually
squib,
have to...
You don't need that.
You don't need any of that. But we've come across this armorer who is, like... expert at this stuff, so we got to use, you know, the live blanks and, you know, instead of his digital. So it just kept getting better, I guess is what I'm saying, because of the people involved.
And the technology as well, like you said, you know, I mean, the technology is enabling in such a way that it's amazing. You know, you can do things by yourself or with a couple people that you used to have like a whole team.
Oh, yeah.
To doing. You
know? I like the show that's premiering for me on Wednesday. I got from just me and my husband with an iPhone, and we would use apps. Like if you threw something, it can explode. Like we would just use free apps and then, you know, delete it. Cool. And it's like anyone can become with the right focus and determination. Like you said, you can become something.
Yeah, exactly. You can make something. Know, because you have the tools and they're affordable. Now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. They're accessible.
What are some of your favorite? I love hearing. Favorite actors or films, like what's your favorite growing up or your genre that you love?
Oh, you know, I mean, this movie specifically, Cut to the Chase, is I think inspired by a lot of the hard-boiled detective movies, you know, Humphrey Bogart.
Like Maltese Falcon.
Or,
like
Robert Mitchum or whatever. Ah. But the theme is actually more Die Hard, you know? It's like it's much more John McClane, you know? It's kind of like we take the hard-boiled detective and we just replace the main guy with kind of a deadbeat.
Nice.
So, you know, instead of Humphrey Bogart, it's this guy who, you know, just can't catch a break. And
I love John McClane.
Yeah, me too. And it's like what I loved about that first Die Hard movie is he's a real guy who doesn't know what the hell he's doing or how he's going to live through any of it. He's become a superhero now, but like I'm not really interested in the sequels. But Cut to the Chase, we wanted to explore that thing of like this guy, you know, he's an ex-con. He's not a criminal mastermind like everybody he's dealing with. You know what I mean?
Yeah, that's so cool.
Good angle.
And I'm seeing like pictures here in the background of like the Louisiana like swamps and stuff, right? The water, whatever you call it.
See, there's an enchantment.
Yeah, there's a certain enchantment, you guys.
Yeah, so you guys went on location and everything.
Yeah,
right?
It was great. We shot everything, basically, like I said, my hometown, Shreveport, Louisiana, and we made a list. It's also called Hollywood South, you guys.
I was going to say, I've heard of, there's better taxes and stuff in South.
Great tax incentives in Louisiana, and the locations are so different. Like, you can have everything from farmland to swampland, and then you've got suburbs, and you've got downtown area. And, like, we really took advantage of the city so much. I really am proud about the way that it comes off, because normally what happens is people come to Shreveport or New Orleans or whatever, and they shoot it for somewhere else, like pretending that it's Chicago or New York or something. And I did that with 6 month Rule. Actually, I shot that in Shreveport as well, and shot it as like Boston or something like that. We didn't really say what it was, but this movie we got to really own it, and like, you know, we need scene in a pasture, we need a scene in a swamp.
Sure, we got that.
Yeah, exactly.
I can't wait to see it, man. I mean, I've been looking for a good movie to watch. I'm going on Amazon tonight, watching Cut to the Chase, folks. With
that
Blaine
is the
Weaver.
Right attitude. Yes,
that's the right attitude. You know, I mean, it's on there. You know, and help. You know, help you out so you can make more movies like this. I mean, kudos to you for getting such a great cast.
Thanks, man.
I mean, it's amazing.
Thanks. I'm real lucky. Those actors are really good.
Do you have a casting person you work with? How'd you get those actors?
I do have a casting person here in L.A., Lauren Bass Casting, I guess. And but I also wrote a lot of the characters for the actors that are playing it. Erin Cahill plays my sister. Had a small supporting part, more really kind of a cameo in 6 month Rule, where in the beginning title sequences we're breaking up, and like I kind of knew her, like we knew each other socially, and then she did this great part and like cried while being funny, and I'm just like, man, you're awesome, and we just had this great day of like, you know, teasing back and forth, and I'm like, I want to do something where you're my sister someday, because I feel like that's the vibe that we have, this brother-sister
thing.
That's
awesome.
So that was always in my brain, so I wrote that part for her, and you know, pretty much all the supporting cast, Patrick Day, who plays like kind of the Darth Vader bad guy, like Lance Henriksen is the Emperor.
He's Darth Vader. It's like John McClane meets Darth Vader. Exactly. I love it.
You're going to notice a lot of pop culture references in our conversations, Obi-Wan.
I know.
But anyways, so Patrick Day and I did this movie Favor together that I mentioned before, where it was like $40,000 and it was what they call a two-hander. It was really just him and I the whole movie, and all night shoots. And we got along really great and really enjoyed working together. And so I wrote this part for him, and, you know, he gets to kick the hell out of me in this movie.
That's amazing. Yeah. There is something as an actor when someone, even if you're not getting paid, but they've said they've written a role for you, I am immediately on board.
I know. Isn't that great?
100%. I'm like, oh, you've written it for me? I'll pay you. Okay. Like, there's something exactly. very, very flattering about that.
Yeah, it's awesome. And so Lindy Greenwood is in the movie. Erin Aaron Cahill, both very beautiful.
Yep.
You were very fortunate to get him on the movie. So you get to be in the lead, of course. It's mm-hmm. your baby. It's your thing. I mean, just like me, I opened the radio station That's so right. I can have a frigging radio yeah. show, you know?
It's very I mean, true. It's yeah, like I always you know? Say that, I always say that I'm the motor, you know? It's like, yeah. I'm just the motor. I'm going to keep this thing going. I'm going to, you know, follow it through all the way to the end.
Have you
know?
Always been like that growing up?
I mean, I guess so. Yeah, I guess so. I didn't, like I said, I never wanted to direct until I thought, I don't like the way you're doing that. So, yeah. like, it's always about taking the next step. And, like, you know, especially with independent movies, I know a lot of independent filmmakers who what they'll do is they'll make the movie and then they'll just wipe their hands and say, all right, well, I'm done. What's next? Yeah. I'm like, that's not how it goes, man. You got to carry the ball all the way. Like,
you really do.
You never get to put it down. There's
no,
never a
yours.
Point. Yeah.
Yeah. If you guys go to cuttothechasefilm.com, you'll see what the hell we're talking about. It's an awesome movie because, I mean, I'm looking at the images here and just kind of like browsing through it. I'm going, I'm watching this tonight, man. This
oh,
is the kind of mood I want to be in.
I kind
you know?
Of, well, my favorite it's is a kinda, film noir thriller. Like,
yeah,
that's
yeah.
my favorite genre.
Like, I'm thinking like Cape Fear or something, yeah. you know, like something like that,
it's,
right?
It's the super same. Fun, yeah.
Right.
It's,
I mean, I'm not saying the story is the same, but you have the setting, you know. I've seen a million movies in the bayou and things like that, you know, and it that's what it reminds me of.
Well, one
bit.
Of the things that, you know, we definitely wanted to make a genre picture, you know, a popcorn, you know, movie.
Yeah.
And so we had this kind of rule of, you know, it really takes a brain trust kind of to do something like this, especially when you're directing and acting, you know. So my producers and my DP and my editor were all there, and we were always talking about the movie and the feeling that we want. And we wanted, you know, a fight scene, a shootout, a chase, or a love scene, you know, in every scene, you know?
Yeah.
So it's, or a big reveal, you know,
yeah, yeah.
of the twists, you know? And like, so you're in the, hopefully what happens is you get in there and we hit the gas about 5 minutes into the movie and we don't stop until, you know, the
that's
very end.
That's exactly how I like it.
Yeah.
My favorite movie of all time is The Usual Suspects because the twists are like, here's one, here's one, here's one, here's one. It's like,
I know.
God.
It's like amazing. They like,
God.
I know, they like bombard you with it at the end. It's like, like an orgasm,
yeah.
right?
Yeah, really,
like
a, that is
like
just
fireworks.
Totally. And when I went and saw Christopher McQuarrie speak about it, he was like, at the end, I spoke to the director, Brian, I forget this, Brian
Singer,
right? Yeah. yeah. And he said, what do you think happened? And he had a totally different version of what he thought happened in the end. But that doesn't matter. It's still like you're on the edge of your seat.
Totally.
You know
this,
what I mean?
This has that as well.
Yeah.
I'm not going to ruin the ending.
Excellent.
But,
oh,
like,
I'm on
people,
board.
At the film festivals and at the premieres, people are always like, so what happens? And I'm like, hey, man, it's up to you.
Yeah,
what do you think?
That's right.
Yeah, exactly.
totally.
Yeah. And that's why Blaine is here to tease the movie. And you guys can watch the trailer at the website. And see the movie on Amazon Video, on Google Play, and iTunes.
That's awesome.
Also on Vudu, Xbox Video.
It's
so this
everywhere.
Means you just
it's
yeah it means you just continue to get different distribution and everything.
Yeah, it seems like every day they add another platform or something like that.
Right. Then how does that work? I mean, are you doing all that?
No, thank God, I'm not doing.
Yeah,
all
I know,
that.
Right?
I have
a lot of the heavy lifting.
I have a distribution company called 108 Media who really handles, you know, all of the placement and everything like that.
That's so, too much. You're the artist. You don't want
to
do that.
Well, I mean, you still have to have meetings with them
sure.
like all the time.
Ugh,
like, you know, I mean, one of the funny things about independent film is like, you know, the placements. You get the placements through the distributor, but then there's always going to be something wrong. It's like, this is not really the art. Like, we have this thing where on Amazon or something, it has a poster of just me. And I'm like, well, that's a great poster, but we really want, you know, Lindy Greenwood. We want Lance Henriksen. We want, you know, Aaron Cahill on this poster with me because, you know, they help.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
yeah.
People aren't clamoring for the next Blaine Weaver movie. But perhaps they want to see.
They will after this one.
Lindy Greenwood in a movie.
That's
yeah,
right.
exactly.
There
right.
you go. I mean, look, you're on the way there. You know, I
yeah,
mean,
for
you're
sure.
like, you know, you've devoted your life to film. You love doing it. You focus on that. That's all you do. There's no reason why you won't succeed in a big way. You know,
oh,
that's
it's great. And you know,
I mean, to do like a full feature film, I mean, I can't even fathom how I could do this.
I have
somewhere.
A hard time making breakfast.
Yeah, right?
I really do.
I know.
Well, it's
incredible.
Just like, you know, it's like you, at a certain point, you decide, you know, do I want to be an artist and make
sure.
this thing? Or, you know, do I want to, you know, make... get my 401k going well.
Sure,
so,
you have to make that choice.
Absolutely. And it's like, so I feel incredibly accomplished just because I can look, you know, at my movie posters on the wall. I was like, I made that.
Exactly.
And that's, I mean, for me, that's what it's all about.
Exactly. And exactly. And that's what people need to understand. It's every step you take towards where you want to be is success. You
absolutely.
Know?
And it doesn't matter if you're crawling like sometimes I do on hands and knees that are bloody with work. Or
are we talking metaphorically?
Yeah, metaphorically. Or which sometimes. No. Or you're skipping because you're lucky as shit, and I've seen those people do it, and they just get right there. Yeah, but no matter what path you take, you do at some point have to struggle, rope climb your way to the next level. You do. Right, everybody does. So.
And you have to understand, it's not going to come as easily for everybody. Yeah. You see other people, it comes easily too.
You think it does, but it doesn't always come easy for them.
Right,
they
exactly.
They have to do stuff you don't know about either.
But some people, you'll have to admit, in life,
I know.
Look, everybody's got problems. There's no doubt about it. But some people have lesser problems.
I know exactly what you mean.
Right? So, but you can't envy that because you're here for a different ride. You know, I think everybody's here for a different journey to learn something else. So it's like we're on the freeway. You know, we happen to be on like adjacent lanes or something, but we're heading.
But I do have. I don't know if you have this. I do have an issue with competitiveness in the arts. When I see someone who looks like they're on the freeway and they're with a convertible and they got life is a highways raging. So do you deal with that, or do you, you know, as an independent filmmaker, do you deal with that and be like, man, I wish I could be making more mainstream, or do you like the idea that you're not mainstream?
Well, I'll tell you this. I think that, especially as a director, filmmaker, competitiveness is not a bad thing.
I know. It's a good thing.
Like, exactly what we've been talking about. Know. You know, it's like I see something, I'm like, I want to try that. You know, blah, blah, blah. I have a really great support, especially in Los Angeles, of other filmmakers who have done what I do or, you know, work in that same field. And that's a really cool club to be a part of. And there's definitely, you know, competitive nature and whatnot that happens. But I think you should always try to, you know, move to that next level and, you know, get the next thing, and whatever you're not comfortable with, try to do. So, yeah, I think I do feel competitive about things, and I feel like that's totally helping.
Yeah.
As long as it doesn't, come out in hate.
Yeah,
you know
mine's
what I mean?
More of a stalking issue. No, I'm kidding.
Oh, fantastic.
That's just plain envy. It's not competitive.
Right, it can
mean
impetus to good things.
Right,
like it can lead you on, yeah.
But competitiveness, I agree. You know, I mean, that's what drives the people, and that's what drives industry, and that's what drives countries. You know, it's competition.
Yeah.
And it, like you said, it's a good thing, you know, so kudos to you for that. Let me ask you this. How long did it take you to put together the story?
Well, this movie came together in kind of a funny way because I had written another film with writer-director Paul Osborne, who I worked with, and it's this big heist movie, you know, much bigger budget, and after 6 month rule, which was about a $1.2 million budget, we were going to up it to like $2.5, $3 million. And I thought we had it, and it kept falling apart. And so for like 2 or 3 years, I was trying to put this financing together, and it kept falling apart. And then when it fell apart the last time, I'm like, okay, I'm going to do something small. I'm going to do something I can manage that I can raise the money for myself, that I don't need all these moving pieces, you know.
That's smart.
And so it came together really quickly where I had the idea, I'm going to do this movie, and I went on Kickstarter and I raised, you know, $20,000, and then, you know, I had a production company come on with more and more, and, you know, it just kind of kept adding.
How cool.
And the script wasn't done. So I had kind of had this idea of what I was going to do. So the script was written in probably 6 weeks, and we got to Louisiana, spent about 3 weeks there prep, and then we shot it for 20 days. And then it took about 3 months, I guess, 3 to 4 months to finish it, you know, as far as editing and color correction, sound design and all that stuff. And then we did a year on the festival circuit. And, like, I didn't know how the film was going to do on the festival circuit, being that it's not your typical film festival, you know, darling. Yeah. You know, it's fun.
It's genre. It's not, you don't want to kill yourself afterwards.
Exactly, exactly. But, man, but they loved it. We did, like, 11 film festivals. We won 5 awards. And, you know,
it
set us up great for our distribution. So.
Wow.
That's very cool, man. So, now, the story, did you know it before you sat down to write the script? Mm. Did you already know how the story is going to pan out and end, or did that happen as you were writing the script? Did you have a story in your head, is what I'm trying
I had
to
a
say.
Vague story, but I didn't know how it was going to end. And I feel like that's, I write for a living, so a lot of times I, you know, get hired on to write movies, you know, and I have to outline it first so I can show it to them and they can approve it. And I'm not good at outlines because I normally don't know what's happening until I get there. I'm like, all right, what's he do now? Maybe he does this. You know, that's kind of the nature of me. So I have to make myself outline things. But I didn't outline this script. I just kind of wrote it out. And yeah, it grew and changed as the script did.
Yeah.
I hate
outlining, too.
I do, too.
It's too structured, right?
I can't get to the bullet points. I don't know what file. Yeah. I don't know what thing to do.
Because, you know, when you're creative, you don't want to think of structure, you know?
Yeah, I don't want to indent. I don't want to know. And I write longhand real messy. That's how I do it.
Longhand? Yeah. What are you, from the
1800s? I have like a quill pen. But I write it real messy. No one can read it, and it's all over the page, and there's no way I could do an outline.
Yeah. But that's good. I mean, as long as you can read it and stuff.
Sometimes
you know?
I can't, which is a problem.
That is a problem.
It's like a great idea.
I know. But did you notice I'm losing my ability to write by hand. You know, I mean, my handwriting is not as nice as it used to be. Mm. I don't write. I barely write. I only checks maybe.
It's funny when you sign your name on a check. You're like, is this how I forgot about this?
Right, yeah. Well, signing we still do, let's say, on credit card checks and stuff like that.
Yeah, but it's
like
rare,
that.
Right?
Right. But other than that, you know, I mean, who writes with pen?
She does, I guess.
But no, you're right. A lot of people do. That's why I ordered like 250 pens with LA Talk Radio on them. We give away almost all of them. People love it. I'm like, okay, good. So people still write.
People still write.
Yeah, you know. And I was in the mood to just give people stuff.
Yeah.
So we'll see. I'm thinking of actually starting to do like giveaways on this show.
Why
maybe
wouldn't
we'll do
you?
Some contest or something.
Oh my God, why
you
wouldn't
you?
You
want to do that?
Of course I do.
Yeah.
Of course I
you
do.
Know, we'll whore ourselves out.
That's exactly what I want. This is all I do. Yeah. I do on my Facebook thing, I'll do caption for a poem and I'll put a funny picture and someone will have to write. I get hundreds of comments. All right, not hundreds. 20s.
Dozens and dozens.
Two or three people write. And whoever wins, I write a poem on their Facebook page. Because that's all good. I have to give.
Yeah.
I want in on this contest.
It's amazing.
Man, I'm going to give out money, too. You know?
Well, that's the way to get it.
Yeah, I'd rather be in that contest.
Yeah. Right?
You're like, that's poem.
So if you're listening to the show, why don't you start listening even more regularly?
Yeah, that's right.
Right? And let your friends know about it, because I'm in the mood to give away some money, you know?
So here we go.
Because I need to grow the show. The point is this. I'm thinking it's been like 9 years for the show, okay? And people that know it love it, right? So the point is just to get it exposed to more people.
That's my
really goal, if I can make one. And that is to actually get a lot of people to know about the show. Because once they do, they're hooked.
That's right.
You,
well, you know, it's going to take social media and free money. That's the two things you need to get, right? So you're working on
social
media.
We'll try with the free money. It usually worked for traditional radio stations in the past.
Oh, you know, right? Sure.
They do like contests and stuff, fly you to Hawaii or something, but then they build it up for weeks, you know. Here, maybe every week we'll give out like $100, $50 or $100 or something.
That's what
I'm saying. You know? We'll make it worth your while, folks.
I could probably learn something from this. I'm trying to sell movies.
Yeah, exactly. You got to be creative.
Could you write a poem for whoever buys it?
Essentially, look, in the beginning, you have to give away your stuff. You know, you sample things. You know, you let people see what you can do. And then somehow you learn. It's like almost inevitably in media, you always have to ultimately finance it through advertising. You know, that's how it works. Mm. But advertising is losing so much of its effect now.
Right.
And you have ad blockers. You know, people are filtering out commercials and things like that. So advertisers are constantly like, struggling. Like, how are we going to get the attention? So they put their content
in weird places.
Yeah, and so what happens is advertisers become content creators, and content creators become advertisers, and the lines are blurred. You know, so when you watch a movie, did an advertiser really create it? You know, and they don't even have to put their own logo in there. That's what I'm saying. They just do like contests or movies or like a YouTube series or something, and they don't put their name in it. You know, like something like Coke or something would promote something, or Nike. Yeah, you don't even see Nike or the swoosh in the whole movie.
Yeah.
But the point is that they invest in that, and So you have to be careful how you really spend on advertising these days. But sure. but you got to get the attention out there. And it's yeah. so hard because everybody's trying to get attention.
Yeah, I was watching Long Island Medium because, of course, I'm obsessed with that show. And there's 8 ads in between each section.
Right.
And it's like ads 1 through 8. I'm not going to watch. And it's the same 8 ads on
yeah,
TLC
right?
Go. Wow. I'm like, God, this is pushing it, man.
You know, watch TLC yeah. Go. You're the one.
I have I was to. Wondering. I'm the only one.
I was wondering where the
it's
TLC audience was.
Teresa. I love that one.
Long Island Medium?
Yeah.
That's a thing?
She's real.
Wow. Does she help people?
Like you could not believe. Like life-changing.
Like Michael Landon kind of?
Yeah,
like
but like...
Highway to Heaven kind of
more
thing?
Like more real.
Sure.
She's incredible.
All right.
Anyway, but don't watch those ads.
And
they're
she's
terrible.
From Long Island.
And she's from Long Island.
All right.
Yeah. There you go. Blaine Weaver, the movie is Cut to the Chase, folks. It's a Blaine Weaver film. And you can watch the trailer at cuttothechasefilm.com. Great cast. I'm going to watch it. I'm planning on watching this tonight, and I'm going to report to you.
We have a movie night. We'll be watching
I just
it
want
Tuesday.
You to know exactly. that it takes me like 4 times to watch a movie.
Not
like,
this
I,
one.
I don't,
not
I don't
this
sit
one.
Through
just
a
wait.
Whole, I'll sit through the whole thing. Really?
You're going to sit through the whole thing. You're going to be
awesome.
Like, wow, that went by so quickly.
Awesome. That's what I'm going to do. But either way, I'm going to watch the whole thing. Blaine, how can people find you if they want to?
I'm on the Twitter. I'm on the Instagram. I'm on the Facebook. And it's Blaine with a Y Weaver. Blaine Weaver.
Very nice.
There you go. And Tori, where can we find you if people want to find
you
on social media?
I am Tori Shulman on Twitter and Instagram, thanks to you, Sam.
I'm following you now because of that poem
it's
thing.
It's a wonderful thing. And on Facebook, just Tori Shulman. Yeah, and I do it once a week, and you get some really good ones, some really good answers.
Awesome, yeah. Awesome. All right, everybody, thank you all for listening. We have more fascinating guests this week like we always do. So thanks for being there for us, and we'll see you tomorrow.
You're listening to Sam in the Morning with Tori, only on LA Talk Radio.